We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, verses 24 to 50.
Ekadatana utyamya vicharan mrikayam pane mrikan anugata shanta kshitidas chishita bisham jalashayam achakshana pavivesha tamashamam sudashamurim asinam shantam ilitalochanam.
Once upon a time, Maharaj Parikshit, while engaged in hunting in the forest with bow and arrows, became extremely fatigued, hungry, and thirsty while following the stags. While searching for a reservoir of water, he entered the hermitage of the well-known Shamik Rishi and saw the sage sitting silently with closed eyes.
Mukam karati vachalam bangam langayate girim vyakipam tamam vande shi gurum dinatayanam om agyana timinandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshumilitam yena tasmai shi gurave namah.
Parikshit's life was glorious right from the time when he was in his mother's womb until his last days when he was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. He did not kill Kali because he knew the great benefits that would come to a sincere soul in this age of Kali. What are the benefits of the age of Kali that we heard from this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam? Yes, Vishakha. Great. Simply by chanting Hare Krishna. What else? Yes. Jai. Jai Maharaj. Yes. Anything else? Okay. The second benefit, if you think something auspicious, you get the result immediately. And if you think something bad, you don't get any reaction. So these are benefits of the age of Kali, which we are now living in at this point. Anything else that we learned from this chapter? I can't think of anything else. You can. Okay, great. Yes, I think she already said that, right? Yes, the holy name. But we can repeat it again. It's three times. Harinam, 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 Evakevalam. Yes. Nothing else in this age of Kali. So simply by chanting the holy name and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we can get all perfection of life. So the principles of religion can easily be established in this age. As Srila Prabhupada explained in this previous chapter also. So Sutta said that I'm almost finished speaking everything about Parikshit, but the sages of Naimisharanya wanted to hear more. So they were encouraging him, please speak more. This sacrifice is only giving us black smoke on our bodies. But the nectar from your mouth of Govinda, this is actually making us feel happy. So you please speak some more. Just a second, less than a second, lava association with a pure devotee can give you all perfection in life. So Sutta Goswami begins to speak, and although he's born in a low family, he's qualified to speak. So what is his qualification? What is the qualification of Sutta Goswami to speak Bhagavatam? What's that? He's learned? Yes? He has heard it from the proper person. And that is, his learning is proper. He's learned because he's heard it in parampara. He's heard it from the proper person. What's his other qualification that we heard yesterday? He has two. One is that he's heard it, and the other is, yes. Yes, he's explaining it. So he got two types of association. One is he got the association of his spiritual master, Shukadev Goswami, by hearing. And the second is that he got the association of the sages by explaining. So this double association made him qualified to speak Bhagavatam. So by their questions, the sages are encouraging him to speak. And when he answers the questions, then he gets more realization. Because when you have to answer the questions, then you have to depend on Super Soul, and you have to, because Super Soul helps you remember what you know, and he gives you things you don't even know. And sometimes you find when you're speaking, then things come out that you've never heard before from your own mouth, or that you've never really understood. And it's, when you speak, it comes, actually. So another point that was brought up in the last verses was that the speaker should have only one object of worship, and that is Krishna. So by the association of Srila Prabhupada, we are also discussing Bhagavatam. We hope to please him by this service. So now in this verse, verses 24-25, we're beginning the story of how Parikshit got cursed. This purport is very, very nice by Srila Prabhupada. So I'd like to read some of it, or maybe all of it. The Supreme Lord is so kind to his pure devotees that in proper time he calls such devotees up to him and thus creates an auspicious circumstance for the devotee. Maharaj Parikshit was a pure devotee of the Lord, and there was no reason for him to become extremely fatigued, hungry, and thirsty. Hare Krishna. Because a devotee of the Lord never becomes perturbed by such bodily demands. So how could he feel like this? But by the desire of the Lord, even such a devotee can become apparently fatigued and thirsty just to create a situation favorable for his renunciation of worldly activities. One has to give up all attachment for worldly relations before one is able to go back to Godhead. And thus, when a devotee is too much absorbed in worldly affairs, the Lord creates a situation to cause his indifference. Supreme Lord never forgets his pure devotee, even though he may be engaged in so-called worldly affairs. Sometimes he creates an awkward situation, and the devotee becomes obliged to renounce all worldly affairs. This happened in the life of Srila Prabhupada. The astrologist predicted that Srila Prabhupada would become more wealthy than Birla, who is one of the richest men in India. But instead, Krishna took everything away from him. So this was the mercy of Krishna. He created an awkward situation. Prabhupada had a company. His servants stole everything, and he lost everything. And then he said, yes? That's true. Yes. Yes. Actually, the prediction came true. Prabhupada often said, I started this business with 40 rupees, and now I have 40 crores of rupees. So that this is a fact. He became wealthier. And he said also in one lecture that, I left my 5 children, and now I have 500 children. That was in the beginning. Of course, later he got 5,000 children. In the very beginning, he... Seattle, 68? Acha, yes. So now I have... I left my 5 children, but now 500. So Prabhupada says in the purport a very interesting thing. The devotee can understand by the signal of the Lord, but others take it to be unfavorable and frustrating. So what is this signal of the Lord? Sometimes we misinterpret the signal, especially in Vrindavan. Devotees sometimes think, oh, I've come to Vrindavan and now I've met the perfect match and this is the signal of the Lord because it's in Vrindavan. But this is not the signal of the Lord. It's the signal of Maya, most likely. The signal of the Lord is different. So how do we know what is the signal of the Lord? Actually, yes, Abhinandan Prabhu. Yes, Rama was on the lotus flower. Tapa, tapa, okay? That was the signal for Lord Rama. Yes. And so, how do we know if it's a signal of the Lord? What is the signal? Madangopa? Yeah, okay. You have a clue here. Okay. We can tell when it's a signal of the Lord by the purport. It puts you in an awkward situation that causes you to renounce Shri Vrindavan. Okay, that's very good. Very good. Sadhu. Yes. Yes. Okay, so you can check with the Vaishnavas, the sadhus. Is this the signal of the Lord that I'm getting right here? Yes. That's very good. Because sometimes we get signals from within, and it's hard to know what is, if the signal is going in the right direction or not. Because we have many things within our heart. So it may not be going in the right direction. Okay, so that's good. The signal of the Lord. Maharaj Parikshit was to become the medium for revelation of Srimad Bhagavatam by Lord Shri Krishna, as his grandfather Arjuna was a medium for Bhagavad Gita. Had Arjuna not been taken up with an illusion of family affection by the will of the Lord, the Bhagavad Gita would not have been spoken by the Lord himself for the good of all concerned. Similarly, had Maharaj Parikshit not been fatigued, hungry and thirsty at this time, Srimad Bhagavatam would not have been spoken by Srila Shukadev Goswami, the prime authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is a prelude to the circumstances under which Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken for the benefit of all concerned. The prelude therefore begins with the words, "Once upon a time." Parikshit had to renounce, just like his grandfathers, but he was too young. It wasn't his time to renounce. So therefore Krishna arranged a situation in which he was very quickly brought back to Godhead. So this was the signal of the Lord. Most people in the material world, if they got such a signal, they would feel, "I am so unfortunate. Why is this happening to me?" But devotees, they see this as a great fortune because it brings them closer to Krishna. When these, just like Kunti, let these calamities happen, because when they happen, then you come. Then you come in my life. So that makes me very happy. So Parikshit, same thing. He's a descendant of Arjuna. So he has the same mentality. We will see. Of course, Prabhupada and his purport is going ahead very much. But anyway, we can still understand the mind of the devotee. Verse 26. The Muni, sense organs, breath, mind, and intelligence were all restrained from material activities. And he was situated in a trance apart from the three, wakefulness, dream, and unconsciousness. Having achieved a transcendental position qualitatively equal with the Supreme Absolute. So here the yogi, here is a yogi who has achieved perfection. Samadhi. He's in samadhi. Prabhupada comments in the purport, a far superior system is bhakti yoga because it engages the soul directly. So this is the important point from this purport, verse 27 and 28. Visage in meditation was covered by the skin of a stag, and long compressed hair was scattered all over him. The king, whose palate was dry from thirst, asked him for water. The king, not received by any formal welcome by means of being offered a seat, place, water, and sweet addresses, considered himself neglected, and so thinking, he became angry. So Prabhupada talks a little bit about Vedic culture, that he was not an ordinary guest, nor was he an enemy, so he should have been received properly. Actually, according to Vedic culture, even an enemy is received like a great friend. When they were fighting the Battle of Kurukshetra, one time Arjuna went over to visit Duryodhana's camp, and he was treated just like a great friend. And Duryodhana said, "What would you like? What can I give you? What can I offer you? You want the kingdom without fighting?" And so this was Vedic culture. They're fighting their whole day, you know, each other. And then at night, they're just like friends. It's just like sporting. In sports, the athletes are fighting and wrestling and doing everything. But then after the match is over, they're together and they're talking. And so this is how the Vedic culture was. So according to the Vedic culture, you must receive somebody with a seat, a place, water, sweet words. This is very important. And there is a word in Sanskrit, at least I know, I don't know if it's in Hindi, atithi. Atithi, he is the uninvited guest. Huh? Atithi. Yes, uninvited guest. Yes. In which countries? Arabic countries? Guest of God. And in the Hindu culture, it was considered that an uninvited guest, someone who comes unannounced to your house, he is God. He is like God coming to your house. Sanskrit and Hindi. Oh, you know. Not in specific time. Not any specified. He just comes unannounced. So one time in the 70s, when Prabhupada was at a temple and somebody came to visit the temple and there was no prasad for him. And Prabhupada was very upset. And then we got an announcement all over ISKCON, every temple. We must have a cook that's constantly making puris and halava. So that anybody who comes, they must get prasad at any time of the day. So this is the Vedic culture. Prabhupada says in a lecture about this, that according to Hindu custom, grihastha must always keep some food for the atithi guest, for this type of guest that comes unannounced. And then he told the rules for grihastha life. The householder, before he eats, he must first feed the children, then the sick people, then the old people, and then he has to go outside and make an announcement. If anybody is hungry, please come and eat. And if nobody comes, then he can eat his food. Finally. Yes. I know some story, actually. Yeah, in LA, the LA grihasthas used to do that. And I heard some of the sannyasis used to hide behind some. And when they would call, then they would go and when the grihasthas would call, the sannyasis would come. This would happen. Yeah, they don't get... Yes. Anyway, these are some of the things that used to go on. Yeah. With who? The sannyasis? Okay. So anyway, yes. Mombasa. They did that. Hindu homes. Okay. So it's still being practiced in Mombasa. Oh, that 28 years ago. It was still being. Now, the next generation, we don't know. Maharaj will go and check it out. Okay. So I have another example. Here in Vrindavan, Prabhupada was going on a morning walk one morning. And they were walking on this, what used to be called Chatikara Road. And then they started walking across somebody's field. And the owner came out. And he saw Prabhupada and the devotees walking on his field. And he came, he offered obeisances. And he said, "Oh, thank you for walking on my land. Now you have purified my land by your presence." Of course, then Prabhupada gave that example. He said, if it was the West, first of all, there would be big, big signs, "Beware of the dog." And then, if you get past the dog, you could be shot, actually, in the West, if you try to go in somebody's house, uninvited guests. So, see the difference between the Vedic culture and the... Yes. Right. So this is the Vedic culture. So Maharaj Parikshit, when he has to make sure that the Vedic culture is being upheld. Now here is a person that was not upholding the Vedic culture. He was not welcoming an uninvited guest. So Prabhupada, paragraph 2, says, about the middle of the purport, "As a matter of fact, the king was right to get angry with Rishi when he needed a glass of water very badly. To become angry in such a grave situation was not unnatural for the king. But Because the king himself was not less than a great saint, his becoming angry and taking action were astonishing. For an ordinary king, it's not wonderful, but because he was a saintly person, his senses are controlled. This hunger, thirst doesn't disturb him. So it must be accepted that it was so ordained by the supreme will of the Lord. The king was a great devotee of the Lord, and the saint was also as good as the king. But by the will of the Lord, the circumstances were so created, they became ways to the king's becoming unattached to family connection and governmental activities, thus becoming a completely surrendered soul unto the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Again, the same statement. The merciful Lord sometimes creates such awkward positions for his pure devotees in order to drag them towards himself from the mire of material existence. But outwardly, the situation appeared to be frustrating to the devotees. Devotees of the Lord are always under the protection of the Lord. In any condition, frustration or success, the Lord is the supreme guide for the devotees. The pure devotees therefore accept all conditions of frustration as blessings from the Lord. I was reading some of Prabhupada's poems, and he was always saying, oh, please get me out of this nescience, this mire, into which I'm so deeply sunk. So it's hard for us to imagine how the pure devotees think like this, but we can understand our situation. We're in the mire, and sometimes Krishna drags us out one way or the other. So we can understand that if the situation is helpful, if we can see it that way, that Krishna is taking us closer to him, then we can get out of this mire of nescience somehow or other. We'll keep going here, verse 29. O Brahmanas, the king's anger and envy directed toward the Brahmana sage were unprecedented, being that circumstances had made him hungry and thirsty. So again, the purport. Prabhupada says, for a king like Maharaj Parikshit to become angry and envious, especially at a sage and Brahmana, was undoubtedly unprecedented. The king knew well that Brahmanas, sages, children, women, and old men are always beyond the jurisdiction of punishment. Similarly, the king, even though he commits a great mistake, is never to be considered a wrongdoer. But in this case, Maharaj Parikshit became angry and envious at the sage due to his thirst and hunger. And Prabhupada describes, as the Lord is never envious of anyone, so also the Lord's devotee is never envious of anyone. The only justification for his behavior is it was ordained by the Lord. So later on in Bhagavatam, we'll see how Parikshit was not at all disturbed by hunger and thirst. He was sitting, listening to Shukadeva Goswami in Canto 10, and by the time he got to 10th Canto, was a lot of fasting many, many days into his Bhagavat Sapta, was many, many days. Then he says to Shukadeva, O learned Brahmana, because of my drinking the nectar of the message of the infallible personality of Godhead, which is flowing down from the ocean of your speeches, I do not feel any sort of exhaustion due to my fasting. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, to prepare to meet death in 7 days, Maharaj Parikshit gave up all food and drink. So this was one of the preparations. As soon as you find out you're going to die, you just start fasting from all food and drink. And we see that some of the devotees who left their bodies, they do this. Srila Prabhupada also was not taking food for at least 6 months before he left his body. As a human being, he was certainly both hungry and thirsty. Therefore, Shukadeva Goswami might have wanted to stop narrating the topics of Krishna. But despite his fast, Maharaj Parikshit was not at all fatigued. Then here, Prabhupada put some words into Maharaj Parikshit's mouth. The hunger and thirst from my fast do not disturb me, Parikshit said. Once when I felt very thirsty, I went to the ashram of Shamika Rishi to drink water, but the Muni did not supply it. I therefore wrapped a dead snake over his shoulder, and that is why I was cursed by the Brahmin boy. Now, however, I'm quite fit. I'm not at all disturbed by my hunger and thirst. So this shows that it couldn't have been because of hunger and thirst. This 10, 1, 13. Yes. Again, he will say the same thing in 2, 8, 26. We'll hear this from Burijan Prabhu. 2826, he says the same thing. And all, again, 10th canto. Prabhupada said that he was afraid that Shukadeva was worried about him, that he might stop. So Pariksit was encouraging, no, no, I'm not at all disturbed. You please keep on talking. Verse 30. The sage had a son who was very powerful, being a Brahmin's son. While he was playing with inexperienced boys, he heard of his father's distress, which was occasioned by the king. Oh, sorry. He heard of his father. Yes. Then and there, the boy spoke as follows. This is verse 30. Oh, what a... Did I skip a page again? Sorry about that. While leaving, the king, being so insulted, picked up a lifeless snake with his bow and angrily placed it on the shoulder of the sage. Then he returned to his palace. Upon returning, he began to contemplate and argue within himself whether the sage had actually been in meditation with senses concentrated and eyes closed, or whether he had just been feigning trance just to avoid receiving a lower kshatriya. So this purport, verse 31, Prabhupada talks about repentance. This is in the middle of the first paragraph. Repentance comes in the mind of a good soul as soon as he commits something wrong. So this was the heart of Maharaj Pariksit. As soon as he did it, he started to repent. We think, oh, the other guy's at fault. Why should I repent? Generally, we blame the other person. Why should I repent? It's his fault. But no, Maharaj Pariksit immediately. Prabhupada says, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami do not believe that the king's action was due to his past misdeeds. So what does this mean? His action was not due to his past misdeeds. He was free of karma. Yes. Madangopa. It was the mercy of the Lord. Okay? Yes, Srivindavan. It was the Lord's arrangement. Okay. What does it mean that if you act, it's due to your past misdeeds? Your action are caused by your past misdeeds, if you're a materialistic person. But Maharaj Pariksit, he was not being forced to act by the modes or by his past misdeeds. The arrangement was so made by the Lord just to call the king back home, back to Godhead. Prabhupada repeats this again and again and again. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the plan was made by the will of the Lord, and by the will of the Lord, the situation of frustration was created. So then Prabhupada talks about the plan is to have Srimad Bhagavatam spoken. So now I'm going to go to the little bit, the end of the purport, just before it talks about Arjuna and the Pandavas. The pure devotee's mundane frustration is meant to elevate the devotee to a higher transcendental position. By placing Arjuna and the Pandavas in frustration due to the intrigue of their cousin brothers, the prelude of the battle of Kurukshetra was created by the Lord. This was to incarnate the sound representative of the Lord, Bhagavad Gita. So it's quite amazing when you think of all the troubles the Pandavas went through. And here Prabhupada is saying it's just so Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. One way to think about it, that all these troubles, everything that happened, was all the plan of the Lord, just so Bhagavad Gita, incarnation. So now, same thing is happening here. So by placing King Pariksit in an awkward position, incarnation of Srimad Bhagavatam was created by the will of the Lord. Being distressed by hunger and thirst was only a show, because the king endured much, even in the womb of his mother. He was never disturbed by the glaring heat of the Brahmastra released by Ashwatthama. So the Brahmastra didn't disturb him, but a little thirst is going to disturb him. As an embryo, he was tolerating in the womb. So how is this possible for him to be thirsty? Not possible. King's distressed condition was certainly unprecedented. Devotees like Maharaj Pariksit are powerful enough to forbear such distresses by the will of the Lord. They are never disturbed. Situation in this case was therefore all planned by the Lord. And now we go to verse 32. The sage had a son who was very powerful, being a Brahmin's son. While he was playing with inexperienced boys, he heard of his father's distress, which was occasioned by the king. Then and there, the boy spoke as follows. So Prabhupada, in the end of the purport, says that, or in the middle, because the age of Kali, and near the middle, was seeking an opportunity to spoil the cultural heritage of the four orders of life, the inexperienced boy gave a chance for the age of Kali to enter into the field of Vedic culture. So Kali was there, he couldn't do anything. He was powerless because of Maharaj Parikshit. So now he got a chance. Hatred of the lower orders of life began from this Brahmana boy under the influence of Kali. Thus cultural life began to dwindle day after day. The first victim of Brahminical injustice was Maharaj Parikshit. Thus the protection given by the king against the onslaught of Kali was slackened. So Sringi had some knowledge, but he didn't have good character. So this was the problem. His knowledge was misused. If knowledge goes to someone of bad character, then the knowledge gets misused. So he was certainly in knowledge. The Brahmanas, they must have knowledge. They must know what are the principles of religion. And the Kshatriyas, they have to enforce it and protect these principles. So if we see, we study the position of the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas. Generally, the Brahmanas are detached. If something may be going on in society, but it's not their duty, it's the Kshatriya's duty to enforce the principles of religion. So sometimes the Brahmanas are so detached that they may not act, even though they know this is wrong, this should be done, because it is their position to advise the Kshatriyas, and it is a position of the Kshatriyas to act and to enforce the principles. But the problem with the Kshatriyas is that sometimes they act without restraint. They're just pushed by force, by passion. So therefore, we need the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas together. That the Brahmanas may not act. So therefore, the Kshatriyas have to act. But the Kshatriyas may act without good intelligence. So therefore, we need the Brahmanas to tell them, you should act like this. So you put them together, and we have a very nice society. Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. Actually, there's an example of this in Ramayana. Vishwamitra, the sage Vishwamitra, came to Lord King Dasharath because he was having a problem in his sacrifice. Some demons were coming and polluting the sacrificial arena. And he was powerful enough himself to kill the demons and get rid of them. But it wasn't the duty of a Brahmin. So therefore, he came to Maharaj Dasharath and he said, you please give me Ram and Lakshman. I need their help to kill these demons. So then King Dasharath gave Ram and Lakshman to go and take care of the demons. So this is an example how the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas used to work together for society. Verse 33, the Brahmanas' son Sringi said, oh, just look at the sins of the rulers who, like crows and watchdogs at the door, perpetrate sins against their masters contrary to the principles governing servants. So Prabhupada, at the end of this purport, describes how the downfall of Brahminical powers began as they gave importance to birthright without culture. Downfall of the Brahmana caste began in the age of Kali. Since Brahmanas are the heads of the social order, all other orders of society also began to deteriorate. So now, what was the cause of this downfall? We will hear further. The descendants of the kingly orders are definitely designated as watchdogs, and they must keep themselves at the door. On what grounds can dogs enter the house and claim to dine with the master on the same plate? So Prabhupada, in one sentence, describes what is this mentality? What is this mentality that crept into the Brahmanas that caused their downfall? In one word, or you can say two words. Vanity, yes, pride. Pride caused the fall of the Brahmins. So see how he's speaking, treating the Kshatriyas. Verse 35. After the departure of Lord Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, supreme ruler of everyone, these upstarts have flourished, our protector being gone. Therefore, I myself shall take up this matter and punish them. Just witness my power. So Prabhupada, at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says he wanted to take the place of Krishna. He says, Krishna is gone, now just see my power. Now there's no one to punish, so I must do this work. So Prabhupada says that an upstart with a little power wants to become an incarnation of the Lord. There are many false incarnations after the departure of Lord Krishna from the face of the globe, and they are misleading the innocent public by accepting the spiritual obedience of a general mass of people to maintain false prestige. In other words, the personality of Kali got the opportunity to reign through this son of a Brahman Sringi. And actually, in the purport before, there's an important sentence near the end. This mentality of false prestige is the cause of downfall, perfect social order. So you can also have a look at your that Varnashram thing, if you still have it, that handout I gave you. It describes the different types of Varnashram. See if I have it. And here, the basis of one's Varna. In the Daiva Varnashram, the basis of one's Varna, character, qualities, training, and work. And in the materialistic Varnashram, parentage. So it is this is where Kali crept in here, that it became based on your birth instead of your qualification. Verses 36 and 37. The son of the Rishi, his eyes red hot with anger, touched the water of the river Kaushika while speaking to his playmates and discharged the following thunderbolt of words. The Brahmana's son cursed the king Thus. On the seventh day from today, a snake bird will bite the most wretched one of that dynasty, Maharaj Parikshit, because of his having broken the laws of etiquette by insulting my father. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that is 12th chapter, verse 11, is described the Rudra principle and how Rudra lives in different places. So one of the places that Rudra lives is where sages are performing austerity. In the purport of this verse, this is 3:12:11. Prabhupada says, there are many sages empowered with the influence of austerity, and many yogis, philosophers, and renouncers who sometimes exhibit their acquired power under the influence of the Rudra principle of anger and passion. The great yogi Durvasa, under the influence of this principle, picked a quarrel with Maharaj Ambarish, and a Brahmana boy exhibited this Rudra principle by cursing the great King Parikshit. When the Rudra principle is exhibited by persons who are not engaged in devotional service of the Supreme Lord, the angry person falls down from the peak of his improved position. So this is what's happening. He's under the influence of the Rudra principle. And this is the problem with people who perform austerities. They control their senses, but anger they cannot control. Very, very difficult. And this is the tiger that gets them, this anger. The senses may be fully under control, but then anger finishes them. So we'll go on in the verses. Thereafter, when the boy returned to the hermitage, he saw a snake on his father's shoulder, and out of his grief, he cried very loudly, O Brahmanas, the Rishi, who was born in the family of Angira Muni, hearing his son crying, gradually opened his eyes and saw the dead snake around his neck. He threw the dead snake aside and asked his son why he was crying, whether anyone had done him any harm. On hearing this, the son explained to him what had happened. The father heard from his son that the king had been cursed, although he should never have been condemned, for he was the best amongst all human beings. The Rishi did not congratulate his son, but on the contrary, began to repent, saying, Alas, what a great sinful act was performed by my son. He has awarded heavy punishment for an insignificant offense. So see how the behavior of the two devotees Shamikamuni was a devotee. He didn't even notice the snake hardly. He said, "Oh, snake, okay." But when he heard about the curse of his son, he was very upset. He said, "This is a heavy, heavy punishment for something that is insignificant." Of course, then the king, he was also thinking, "Oh my God, what have I done?" So both of them were repenting. The Rishi was repenting for his son, because if a servant does something, the master is responsible. The boy was not of age, so the father's responsible for whatever happens. So therefore, now verses 42 to 46, Shamika is going to be lamenting. For all these verses, Shamika Muni will be lamenting. "Oh my boy, your intelligence is immature, and therefore you have no knowledge that the king, who is the best amongst human beings, is as good as his personality of Godhead. He is never to be placed on an equal footing with common men. The citizens of the state live in prosperity, being protected by his unsurpassable prowess. My dear boy, the Lord, who carries the wheel of a chariot, is represented by the monarchical regime. And when this regime is abolished, the whole world becomes filled with thieves, who then at once vanquish the unprotected subjects like scattered lambs." So this has actually happened, that the thieves in Kali Yuga, nobody is secure with their property. They have to lock the doors. As Bhurijan Prabhu mentioned several times, you have to lock your door. It's not safe. Not only are the thieves coming to attack you in your home, but the thieves are elected into the government post. We see here in India that when they have election time, all guns are banned, because often the other candidate gets shot. One of the candidates may get shot, especially here in UP. They ban all guns on election day. So this is the state of affairs, Kali Yuga. At the end of the purport, Prabhupada talks about this. "The thieves and rogues of modern democracy seek election by misrepresentation of votes, and the successful rogues and thieves devour the mass of population. One trained monarch is far better than hundreds of useless ministerial rogues. And it is hinted herein that by abolition of a monarchical regime like that of Maharaj Parikshit, mass of people became open to many attacks of the age of Kali. They are never happy in an overly advertised form of democracy. The result of such a kingless administration is described in the following verses." Somebody came from Hong Kong, and they told me that when all the when there was a change, I think it was 1997, they changed from their self-independent rule over to, or it was British rule over to Chinese rule. They were changed. So what happened was they had all these people in government office, hundreds and hundreds of people. And the government, as Prabhupada says, the ministerial rogues, all voted that the taxpayers should give each one of those outgoing people a very nice vacation on a boat to Europe. So all of these hundreds of people took the taxpayers' money and went out on excursions as they were leaving office, hundreds of them. So they were really upset about this, but what can they do? Because these are their elected representatives. So anyway, this is the state of democracy. Verse 44. "Due to the termination of the monarchical regimes and the plundering of a people's wealth by rogues and thieves, there will be great social disruptions. People will be killed and injured, and animals and women will be stolen. And for all these sins, we shall be responsible." Very, very heavy. The brahmanas are responsible for having Kali enter the society. So how this has come true? The monarchy of Maharaj Parikshit was so nice that people were being protected from all these things. And now the sage is saying, "So what you have done, all these things are going to happen." So why don't we just have a short, brief discussion here. Difference between monarchy and modern democracy. What is, somebody give me one difference in the monarchy, and yes.
Considered like God.
But
today the leaders
Yes. Fools. So the people see them for what they are, but the fools still like them. It's very difficult. Anything else? Yes, Maharaj. Yes.
Now they are the thieves.
Yes. Before, the strong king could uproot the thieves, and now they are the thieves. The thieves, yes. Some ministers may want justice. Yes. Yes. Yes, so justice, there is no justice, as Shukadev predicted. That if you have money, you get justice. Yes, Sankirtan Prabhu.
And would there be a monarchical system in people that actually like about the king?
They love the king.
In Thailand, still, the people have a very great love for the king.
In Thailand. Monarchical regime, the people love the king because the king treats them like his children.
Our system, the democratic system, is very impersonal.
Yes, democratic system is very impersonal. Indifferent. Yes. Their own welfare comes first, and then the people. But Lord, you see Lord Ram, he even banished his wife Sita because of something that somebody said, some washerman, or washerman's wife. She criticized Sita, so for that he banished Sita. So how they cared more for the citizens than for their own family. This was the monarchs, the kings. They cared more for their citizens. So actually, there is one nice thing that I heard Virajan explain in his lecture on Varnashram. Maybe he talked about this the day I missed. But he was saying that when the brahmanas organize society, then they have a religious center, that moksha or religion, religious principles, this is the goal. When the kshatriyas organize society, then power is the most important thing. Who gets the power? And when the vaishyas organize society, then what happens? Money is the center. Money is the most important thing in the society. And so the kshatriyas, they become dependent on the money from all the rich people, and they make the laws according to who has the most power to influence them with their money. They get donations for their campaign donations. And so then the vaishyas, the kshatriyas depend on the vaishyas exploit the shudras, and then there's revolution. And then the shudras come in power. And what is their goal? What is their center? Sense gratification, yes. Enjoying. It's one of the campaign slogans in America before I became a devotee. It was two cars in every garage and a chicken in every pot. Very old. Yes. So this was the campaign slogan. And he won also. He won, I think, the election. Yes. This is the shudras. We will have food, and we will have nice cars, and we will enjoy. We will enjoy life. So Prabhupada was explaining in a lecture in Melbourne in 1975. He was describing this scene here, how Shingi was crying, and then Samika asked, "What happened, my dear boy?" And he said, "Oh, the king insulted you, so I've cursed him." And then Shamiki was so upset. "You've brought defamation to the whole Brahmana community. You have allowed Kali Yuga to come in, and this is Kali Yuga's conspiracy." Prabhupada said it was a conspiracy by Kali Yuga to get Parikshit out, because he couldn't do anything while Parikshit was there. So he made a conspiracy to get Parikshit out of power, so he could have his influence. So Kali entered. Even though Kali appeared the day after, the moment Krishna left, he could not do anything. He was powerless. But now he's entering. This is the point, actually, at which Kali is entering the society. So let us go on. Verse 45. Of course, Prabhupada went on here in the story. So he sent the news to the king. "My son foolishly cursed you, but what can I do? It is God's wish. It has been done, so you be prepared." This was how Prabhupada said. So Prabhupada made the point that even a 10-year-old, 12-year-old boy had such power. Because, and this was only because of the protection of Maharaj Pariksit, that he could do this. And then he turned on Maharaj Pariksit. Verse 25. Again, describing what happens when the kings, when the monarchy is destroyed. At that time, the people in general will fall systematically from the path of a progressive civilization in respect to the qualitative injunctions. Thus, they will be more attracted to economic development for sense gratification. And as a result, there will be an unwanted population on the level of dogs and monkeys. Why dogs and monkeys?
Because they're unashamed.
Unashamed. No shyness. No culture. In the street. Anywhere. So this is today's civilization. Verse 46. Emperor Pariksit is a pious king. He is highly celebrated and is a first-class devotee of the personality of Godhead. He is a saint amongst royalty, Rajarshi. Mahabhagavata, he has performed many horse sacrifices. When such a king is tired and fatigued, being stricken with hunger and thirst, he does not at all deserve to be cursed. So Prabhupada comments at the beginning of the purport, after explaining the general codes relating to royal position, and asserting the king can do no wrong and therefore is never to be condemned, the sage Shamika wanted to say something about Emperor Pariksit specifically. So it's summarized, he's a Mahabhagavata. He's a ruler who administered the religious principles of the royal codes. He's a Rajarshi. He's a great devotee, a self-realized soul, so he should not have been cursed. Verse 47. Very important purport here. Verse 47, then the Rishi prayed to the all-pervading personality of Godhead to pardon his immature boy, who had no intelligence and who committed the great sin of cursing a person who was completely free from all sins, who was subordinate, and who deserved to be protected. So three reasons. What are the three reasons why he should not have been cursed? Three reasons Prabhupada gives here, yes. He's a Mahabhagavat. This is Vaishnava Parad. This is Vaishnava Parad. What else? If you look at it from the point of view of the Varnashram society. Yes, yes. He should have, actually, the point he made here, that he was subordinate as a Kshatriya. He was subordinate to Shringi, to the Brahmanas. So he should be protected, not cursed. He should have been protected. So Prabhupada discusses Vaishnava Aparad. He was a sinless devotee. In the purport, Prabhupada says, the Lord never forgives a person who condemns his pure devotee. Therefore, by cursing a king, that the foolish Shringi had committed not only a sin, but the greatest offense. Therefore, the Rishi could foresee that only the Supreme Personality of Godhead could save his boy from his sinful act. He therefore directly prayed for pardon from the Supreme Lord, who alone can undo a thing which is impossible to change. The appeal was made in the name of a foolish boy who had developed no intelligence at all. Then in paragraph 2, Prabhupada raises two questions. The first question is, well, maybe it was a desire of the Lord that Pariksit might be put into this awkward position, but why was a Brahmin son made responsible for this great calamity of Kali entering? What is the answer? Why was a Brahmin's son made responsible? Yes, Darshan. Yes, he was a child, easily forgiven. Okay, that was the first question. Okay, so he's a child. But then, we excuse the child, but then why is the Brahmana community as a whole being held responsible for the entrance of Kali into society? That's the second question Prabhupada raises. Why is the Brahmana community then? Why should they be held responsible? And the answer is given by Srila Prabhupada. Yes. Not killed. Those were not killed. Yeah, not killed, yeah. The ones who were killed, they got salvation. The ones who were not killed by Krishna, the demons who were not killed by the Lord were allowed to take birth in the families of Brahmanas to take advantage of the age of Kali. The all-merciful Lord gave them a chance to have their births in the families of pious Brahmanas so they could progress towards salvation. But the demons, instead of utilizing good opportunity, misused the Brahminical culture due to being puffed up by vanity in becoming Brahmins. A typical example is the son of Shamuk Rishi. All the foolish sons of Brahmanas are warned hereby not to become as foolish as Shringi and be always on guard against the demoniac qualities which they had in their previous births. Very heavy statement by Srila Prabhupada. Very heavy. Beware of your previous birth. So, of course, there are very nice devotees who are born in Brahmin families also. So they are... This warning is not for them. The foolish boy was, of course, excused by the Lord, but others who may not have a father like Shamik Rishi will be put into great difficulty. So here is a warning by Srila Prabhupada. Watch out. If they misuse the advantages obtained by birth in a Brahmana family. So if you don't misuse it, then it's okay. If you act properly as a Brahmin and you don't have hatred for the lower castes, very important purport. In verse 48, the sage thus regretted the sin committed by his own son. He did not take the insult paid by the king very seriously. So Prabhupada in the purport explained that the Lord will never forgive someone who commits an offense at the devotee. So the Lord says, you go to that devotee, just like Maharaj Ambarish was offended by Durvasa. He went up to Vishnu and Vishnu said, I cannot help you. You have to go to Ambarish. So Shamika knew this and he knew his son committed Vaishnava Parad. So therefore he thought, if only Parikshit would counter curse him, then he'll be saved. Just imagine, he was hoping that his son would be cursed by Maharaj Parikshit. But he knew that a pure devotee is callous about worldly advantages or reverses. Such devotees are never inclined to counteract personal defamation, curses, negligence, etc. As far as such things are concerned, personal affairs, devotees do not care for them. So this is where we are seeing the mind of the devotee. Something happens to him, he doesn't counter curse. He doesn't even think. He doesn't even identify the perpetrator. He doesn't think like that. He has a whole different mentality. But in the case of their being performed against the Lord and his devotees, then the devotees take very strong action. It was a personal affair. Therefore, Shamika Rishi knew the king would not take counteraction. So we can think of that when it happens to us. If it's a personal affair, then we should think like Maharaj Parikshit. Not counter-curse the person. We should repent for our own mistakes. Parikshit is teaching us here. So there is no alternative than to place an appeal to the Lord for the immature boy. Prabhupada explains, it is not that only the Brahmanas are powerful enough to award curses or blessings upon the subordinates. The devotee of the Lord, even though he may not be a Brahman, is more powerful than a Brahmin. Cannot tell by outward appearances. Parikshit was more powerful than Shringi. He could have counter-cursed him. But he didn't. And Prabhupada explains why. A powerful devotee never misuses the power for personal benefit. Whatever power a devotee may have is always utilized in service towards the Lord and his devotees only. So the devotee has all mystic powers. Parikshit had all mystic powers, but he didn't use them because he would prefer to depend on the master of all mystic powers, Yogeshwara. He would prefer to depend on Krishna. Let me see what is the signal of the Lord. I will not use. Why should I use my powers for my own protection? It's not for that purpose. It is for his purpose. He wants me to undergo this, so all right. Let it happen. Why should I do something? Okay? This is his mentality. The sage thus regretted the sin committed by his own son. He did not take the insult paid by the king very seriously. Right. So, Prabhupada says, the whole incident is now cleared up. Maharaj Pariksha's garlanding the sage with a dead snake was not at all a very serious offense, but Sringi's cursing the king was a serious offense. The serious offense was committed by a foolish child only, therefore he deserved to be pardoned by the Lord, although it was not possible to get free from the sinful reaction. Maharaj Pariksha also did not mind the curse offered to him by a foolish Brahmin. On the contrary, he took full advantage of the awkward situation, and by the great will of the Lord, Maharaj Pariksha achieved the highest perfection of life through the grace of Shri Shukadeva Goswami. Actually, it was the desire of the Lord, and Maharaj Pariksha, Rishi Shamika, and his son Sringi were all instrumental in fulfilling the desire of the Lord. So none of them were put into difficulty because everything was done in relation with the Supreme Person. So even though it seems that Sringi was bad, and he was because he was cursing Maharaj Pariksha, but because it was Krishna's will, actually. So therefore, he was not going to be put into difficulty because of that. Verse 50. Generally, the transcendentalists, even though engaged by others in the dualities of the material world, are not distressed, nor do they take pleasure in worldly things, for they are transcendentally engaged. Sometimes people engage the devotees, so they try to engage. They may try to engage you or us in the dualities of this material world. But the devotees, here we take the mentality. We're not distressed because they are transcendentally engaged. They're not distressed by people trying to disturb you, and we're not also attracted. The devotees are not attracted by the allurements of the material world. Because, what's that verse in Bhagavad Gita? Why are they not attracted and why are they not disturbed? Such pleasures have a beginning and an end. Also, another verse. They're taking pleasure in the self. Yes, another verse. Paramdishtva nivartate. Yes. They have a transcendental engagement. They are engaged with the param. They are with the superior energy, not with the apara. They are with the para. Param, dishtva. They see the param in everything. And that's where their engagement lies. End of the purport, Prabhupada says. Material distresses and happinesses are products of the three modes, and therefore the causes of such material distress and happiness have nothing to do with the transcendentalists. The king was a devotee, and the rishi was a mystic. Therefore, both of them were unattached to the accidental incident created by the supreme will. Playful child was an instrument fulfilling the Lord's will. So the devotee, he lives always with Krishna. His relationship is with Krishna. In the material world, he's just playing a part, whatever part the Lord gives him. You'll be a manager, you'll be a sannyasi, you'll be a this, you'll be a that. So okay, this is the part I have to play in the drama of Krishna. Someone gives him $1,000,000. Okay, this is given to me by Krishna. It's part of the drama. Use it for Krishna. Or someone kills him. It's a part of the drama. After the drama, you give back the money, take the knife out of you, and you go back to your real life. So the devotee, he's simply trying to see the signal of the Lord. How am I supposed to play my part? What am I supposed to do? What is his pleasure? How can I please him? So Pariksit is living in this drama, the drama of Krishna. Prabhupada gave the example in a previous chapter that just like the mother teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. So Krishna teaches the world through his devotee. So he's teaching the world through Pariksit. He's teaching the world through Pandavas, through Kunti. The Pandavas had so many problems, just so, Prabhupada says, Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. And now Pariksit, the same thing. Just so Srimad Bhagavatam can appear for the enlightenment of the world. So Pariksit doesn't begrudge the will of the Lord. He doesn't blame anyone. He accepts whatever happens as Krishna's mercy. So if we have this attitude, accept everything as Krishna's will, we can be satisfied and we can see how Krishna is bringing us closer to him at every step. So any questions or comments? Maharaj. 37. Again, remember how Prabhupada was writing back in 1962. Okay. Right. Yeah, so just what Prabhupada said here. Uh-huh. Right. So this was happening in the 60s, and Prabhupada was writing about it here in his purport.
How, so he mentioned it subtly.
Subtly, yes.
How, now being uprooted.
Now being up, they're trying to get rid of the caste system.
By another class of men, civilly influenced by Kali.
Yes. Yeah, they're in Kali and they're in Kali, both of them. Yes, Amala Gora? Shingi? Yeah, yeah. 49. Yes, yes. Yeah, Prabhupada often confuses us like that. That it, when you, I think I in that conversation with the bull and the cow, and no, with the bull and Maharaj Pariksit, at first, Pariksit was glorifying, oh yes, this is very nice, you're not identifying the perpetrator. And that, but then Prabhupada in the purport later on, he was saying that, oh, but he was influenced by Kali's presence, and so he was speaking all these philosophies. So sometimes even Arjuna, Prabhupada glorifies him that, oh, first he says, oh, this is not good, this is weakness, that he's feeling this compassion for the body. Then later on he says, oh, this is his Vaishnava heart. So here, yes, so actually we can see this on many levels. At one level, Kali is influencing the Brahman. But Kali is influencing the Brahman also by the will of Krishna. That ultimately, Krishna wanted Bhagavatam to be spoken. So in order for Bhagavatam to be spoken, then Kali had to influence the Brahman, weak boy. Kali had to enter somehow. And then Bhagavatam had to come to defeat Kali again. Yes. Yes, he was weak, he was immature. No. But Prabhupada, according to Prabhupada, he won't get a reaction because it was the will of the Lord. In the next purport, 50, I think it is, that I just... Was it the last sentence? That they were all instruments, so therefore he would not be put into difficulty. Yes, Bhakti Damian. Kali, yes, five places. Yes. Yes. So his question is that Kali was given five places to live. Wherever there is licit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling, and wherever there is talk of gold. Now the Brahmana boy was not one of these five places, so how is it possible for him to have entered there? Maharaj?
No, he entered because the state was in knowledge of both.
Oh, gambling. Okay. Mental speculation, the pride of the Brahmins. Yes, Rishi Vrindavan. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. He found another place. He found a loophole. Yes. So Kali can actually go in other places too. Because these five places create a certain mentality. So that Brahmin boy had that mentality, which you get from these other places. Yeah, we're lucky that our yeah, but he didn't keep it in his mind. He's cursed. Yeah, I mean, it came out of his mind. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Very good. There was a quarrel, Bhakti Damian. What was the question? Okay, the question is, if you engage in mental speculation, do you break your spiritual vows? In the case of Sri Vrindavan, maybe so. Your guru told you no mental speculation is one of your regulative, four regulative, five regulative principles. yes, Maharaj.
The answer is, you get the reaction, things that you physically do.
Yeah, that's...
When those things
Or it comes to the verbal also. It may come to the verbal or physical. Yeah, so you may have some doubts or speculation in your mind, but if you start preaching it, then you're in trouble. If you start acting on it or preaching it, if it comes to the level of action or words, then you will definitely get the reaction. Amalagora? Yeah, it's the influence of Kali. It's the influence of Kali. Divyambar. Previous purport from which verse? Okay. You just remember it. All right. Oh, subtle sense gratification. Yes. Mental speculation is subtle sense gratification. So you may think you're not breaking the four regulative principles. 1725 purport. Oh, yeah. Okay. This is 17 what? 25. End of purport. By pride, either artificial or real, the resultant action of austerity is spoiled. So here we go. This is one of the legs of religion is he was practicing austerity, but Kali entered as pride. So this is the thing Prabhupada says that destroys your austerity is when you become proud. So this is very nice here, how there's four legs of religion, and austerity is one of them. So this Brahmin boy certainly had austerity. But then Kali attacked in the form of pride. And therefore his austerity was lost. Yes, very good. Who else had it? Darshan it was? You had? No, okay, is this one finished? Does anybody have anything else to say on this one? Okay, next question, Darshan. Now we're in chapter 18 again, right? Purport to verse 18. Yeah. Well, it seems to me what Prabhupada's talking about here is 100 years from when he was living. I mean, that's what I understood from this. Is that what? I don't know, but it seems to be there at the time of Lord Chaitanya also. And it's hard to understand this. It says, the statement in the purport is, this verse proves, okay, thousands of years ago there was no bar to learning or preaching the transcendental science because of inferior birth. The rigidity of the so-called caste system in Hindu society became prominent only within 100 years or so when the number of Dvija Bandhus or disqualified men in the families of higher castes increased. Then he goes on to say, Lord Chaitanya revived the original Vedic system. That's very hard to understand. Because I understood it was 100 years from Srila Prabhupada. Then he starts talking about how Lord Chaitanya, and that's 500 years. Yeah, so I can't clarify this. Yeah, I'll look it up in the original. I have the original. You have it? What is it? A mistake? Oh, yeah, you were translating, right? You know that answer to that? Because she was a translator, so she would ask these questions. You know the answer for that? You remember? Oh, you have the original, or? Oh, you have it with your book. Oh, you have the original. Yeah, but is it all in the same sequence like this? That's the question. Makes sense, yes? Okay, yes, okay, so we can understand it like that. More prominent. Right. So we can pick up we can pick up from this sentence more prominent, the word more prominent, and we can understand it in that way, that it became more prominent within 100 years or so. Okay, any other question? Sankirtan Das. Yes. So his real self comes out. Yes.
He's covered for a moment.
Yeah.
Then he reflects.
Then he reflects. Yeah.
Next time he won't do it.
No. And that's what he says. We'll see that tomorrow when he gets cursed. That, you know, this is so good. Now I won't do this again.
I see. Yeah.
What's that?
In the ninth canto, when
so this is the material world, always adjusting. Oh, I did this, now I have to adjust. Yeah. Abhinanda. Yeah, Yati. Yes, yes. Same thing happened with Sharmista and Devayani. And Devayani was cursing Sharmista.
And Sharmista
threw her in the well. And then she had to marry a Kshatriya that she was cursing. That's a very interesting twist. Yeah. Shivindavan. Of the demons. In Kali Yuga, yes, there is a quote somewhere in Padma Purana, Prabhupada says. Yeah. Which one? Varaha Purana, okay. Not in all cases. We have very nice devotees who are Brahmins. I mean, obviously, everyone can be, I mean, we're much more demoniac. We're also the descendants of demons. Yeah, I know. Imagine those who aren't Brahmins. Yes, they had the darshan of Krishna, but they didn't get killed by him. But we didn't get any darshan or anything. We're just the descendants. Yes. ISKCON is opposed by Brahmins in South India. Demoniac. Yes. Yeah. Well, we had this problem ever since we came to India. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Caste Brahmins tried to kill Bhaktisiddhanta. All through history, they seem to be. Who is? Oh, yes, Ramanujacharya. Yes. Shivanam. Pishachas, Bhutas, yes. Acha. Okay, watch out for Brahma Rakshasas. Yes. Yeah, watch out. Any? Let's change the subject now. Any other questions? Darshan? Comment? Defend himself. If he's a preacher and he's blaspheming, he can defend himself, not just let everyone say anything they want. That's untrue. Okay, any other questions on this? Abhinanda? When you hear another devotee being blasphemed, if you hear another devotee being blasphemed, what action should be taken? Everybody is silent. Everybody knows, yes. Vishakha, Parvati. Yes, Parvati has a solution. Try to rectify the situation, kill the guy, or run away. Yeah, three solutions. She has three solutions. Darshan. Yes. Shudra. That's for Shudra. Madhyamadikari should leave the place. Kshatriya should kill him. Yes. And Uttamadikari should defeat him. And a Shudra should kill himself. But a devotee should leave the place. A devotee should not hear. Huh? Yeah, then he'll start praising the devotee. How you know?
To give him a job.
Yes. 75 in Calcutta. Yes, I was also there. Chivikra Maharaj. Yeah. So who was doing, what was that? He pierced my ears. Chivikra Maharaj was saying. Oh. Oh, acha acha. He smashed the door. Oh. Better to pierce my ear with a knife than to hear such a thing. My husband had a different reaction. He was also there in Calcutta. And there was some nonsense talking, and he says, I think I'll go and uplift my consciousness by going to sleep and taking a nap. Sleep, yeah.
I think it's so disturbing.
Yes. He said, I will uplift my consciousness. Yeah, yes, it was a joke. They were having such a conversation. Yeah. Yes. Like killing yourself. Go to sleep. Yeah, but you. Okay. Sankirtan is bringing up modern psychiatry here. Attentive listening, according to modern psychiatry, you should be a very attentive listener and let the person just speak. And when he finishes speaking, then he'll feel better, right? He'll feel much better. He gets it out, and then all the blasphemy is out, and then he won't speak it anymore. And then he can see a good audience. Yes. Yeah, okay. Here is the answer. Use your intelligence when you're doing attentive listening. Vanamali. You try to change the topic. Yes. You can't just leave because we're living together. What if, you know, there's only two devotees in the temple and, you know, like he has that situation and if the other devotee is like that, and what are you going to do? You leave and where are you going to go? Yeah. You know. Depends on the gravity of the offense. Okay, the gravity of the offense, but we should be careful of all offenses. Vishakha. Yes. Yeah. This is my point also, that you're going to get a reaction for hearing. Not only will he get a reaction for speaking, but just like Trivikra Maharaj, you will get a reaction for hearing. Okay. Okay. So here's the answer to your question. Any other questions or comments? Divyambar? Oh, yes. Okay, I was going to ask you. Now, here is an answer to a question that was asked many classes ago, This is, let's see, chapter 9, verse 28. Well, what's the question? Okay, chapter 9, verse 28. I don't have the book. Okay. Three dimensions. The question was about three dimensions. Okay, so it said that the descriptions are sometimes measured by three dimensions. What are the three dimensions? You have an answer from? Gobi Pranadana. Different days of Brahma, different planets, and different universes. Okay, these are the three dimensions. Different days of Brahma, days of Brahma, different planets, and different universes. These are the three dimensions that are being described. Yeah, well, they have different Brahmas with many heads. Yeah, well, you have a Brahma that has hundreds and thousands of heads. And it's going to be, yeah. Fourth dimension is time. Yes. Okay, no chronological order because time is conspicuous, but how is it conspicuous? In the Lord's pastimes is conspicuous. Yeah, it's about the Lord's pastimes. Okay. Yes. The pastimes of the Lord, there is no time. What am I? There is time factor if it's different day of Brahma. Yeah. Time, depth, and length. Okay, I'm sure there's many angles of vision on the dimensions. Parvati's next. Time factor is different according to where you live. If you're on Brahmaloka, it's quite different. And if you're here, it's quite different. If you're an ant, it's quite different. Or a fly, or a bug. Okay, different conceptions of time. Okay? Yes, they can adjust, but we cannot. Very difficult for us. We were to go, somebody went to, in Bhagavatam, somebody went to Brahmaloka and he came back, everybody was gone. Because it was like, you know, a few minutes, he had to wait for a concert up there. Brahma was busy, he was waiting for a concert. He came back and it was like, you know, a few thousand, hundred years were finished and everybody was, you know, oh my God. He came, father of Revati, father of Revati. And he came back just in time for Balaram to become his daughter's husband. And Dumna Maharaj. Yes, he went to invite Brahma for the opening. And what happened to his, came back, the temple was already opened or? Oh. Okay, so don't think about going to Brahmaloka to invite Lord Brahma for your opening. Yes, because when you come back, it'll be a whole new scene. Yeah, you may miss your Bhakti Vaibhava examination. Don't go to Lord Brahma for help in your questions. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.